Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Organized Chaos. Organized Chaos is ESPN's newest podcast, hosted by former NFL coach Rex Ryan and his former Jets and Ravens linebacker Bart Scott. The duo will be reunited with this podcast with new episodes every Monday that'll provide listeners with expert insight and analysis on everything happening around the league, featuring trending stories from on and off the field. That's Organized Chaos. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Also, the Peabody and Emmy Award-winning 30 for 30 film series presents Once Upon a Time in Queens, a four-part documentary event about the city, the swagger, and the wild ride of the 1986 Mets. This documentary explores the epic tale of one of baseball's most dominant and iconoclastic teams and their legendary World Series comeback. Hear from former Mets players and fans, including Daryl Strawberry, Keith Hernandez, Bill Burr, Cindy Lauper, and more. Watch parts 1 and 2 of Once Upon a Time in Queens, Tuesday, September 14th at 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN, followed by parts 3 and 4 Wednesday, September 15th, also at 8 p.m. Eastern, and is available to stream on ESPN Plus and the ESPN app immediately after its premiere. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, something weird going on with Lamar Jackson. Not all the way weird, but I'm not sure my man's getting the best advice. We'll talk about that and more, but first... All right, man. Week one, NFL action. I feel like I forgot to mention something that happened last week. It happened to me. I'm sure I'm not the only person it's happened to. But, like, I play fantasy football. Gabe, do you play fantasy football?
I used to. I don't play anymore.
Why not?
I got tired of losing, man. I would, like, have the most stacked team, have a great regular season, and then just choke in the postseason.
Oh, that keeps happening to me, too. Like, I feel like I have a tendency of building some juggernauts of sorts. And then I don't know what happens, man. We get to the end. I got to hire a better training staff. You know what I'm saying? My cats just wind up just not being in the right place for whatever reason. And we just can't get this whole thing done. But I keep playing. I play with a bunch of guys that I've been playing with now for like 15 years. I guess we go back that far. And... yeah, it just, I don't know. I don't want to play in a bunch of leagues because, as you might imagine, everybody and their mama asked me to jump in their league. And I'm like, I'm not playing your league because you don't want me to play in your league. You want to beat me in your league, right? Like, nobody wants to tell their friends about how Bomani came in and won their league. No, that's not what they're going for. They want to talk about how they beat Bomani and they want to talk noise about it. And so I need some people I can talk some noise back to, except the guys I play with actually don't talk any noise. So I just wind up being, I'm the asshole. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm the dude that be coming in there. I think I've told you the name of my fantasy team is Johnny Law. We dole out violence with impunity. There is no consequence when we do so. It's what we do. Johnny Law, a.k.a. The Law. You know what I'm saying? But I dropped the ball this year. The draft is on Labor Day every year, and I don't know how or why it wound up happening. I knew an hour before the draft was coming, but I didn't set like no calendar alert or nothing. I might have fallen asleep on the couch. I don't know what happened, but I missed the draft. And you know how it goes when you miss the draft, man. The computer just wind up giving you any old Motley Crue of characters. Except for this year, dog, The Law ain't about to be no reforms out here. It's like summer 2020 never happened for The Law. They gave me Dak Prescott and Amari Cooper. You know what I'm saying? So I came off the rip just sitting on points. Just sitting on points. Let me go look this up and see who else played for The Law. Because once again, since I did not actually draft my own team, I have to check out reminders. Like The Law guarantee, we're going to wind up the top scoring team in the league this week. Nick Chubb, that was one of my keepers. We kept him around. Got that dude Brandon Cooks coming in off the bench. You know what I'm saying? Aaron Jones, I got to say he let me down. I feel like if you're a Packers fan, you feel the same way. You feel that same way about Aaron Rodgers. And I realized something about the Packers, which is they just ain't got the kind of team culture that The Law has. You know what I mean? Like, Aaron Jones came out here. He wasn't ready to play, but it didn't matter because everybody else had already come out here and pick up the slack. You know, Aaron Jones come in and they go, you're like, man, I had a bad game. Don't worry about that. The Law got your back, right? You got to believe that. Nobody's above The Law. The Law's above you. The Law holds you down. You see? And that's what The Law did. The Law held him down. That's what we do. And the Packers, they didn't have that. They didn't have anybody to keep them all on the up and up. It's been a tough offseason. Aaron Rodgers, all this stuff. He out here with a ponytail, by the way. I don't really know what time. And it's like a pony nub right now. So it's like, it's not even like his hair is long. It just got like, I don't know. He getting in touch with his Chico, California roots, I suppose. But anyway, yeah, the Packers got to get some of this team spirit that we got over here with the law. Maybe I need to send them some of my team leaders just to put them up on game. Like, I don't want to get like actually put these guys on the team, but just to let them know, like, look, what when Aaron Jones is over here, he feels more comfortable. He feels more secure. He feels like he ain't got to get everything done. You know what I'm saying? But up there, all the pressure is just a little bit too much for him. But I don't know if anything feels better than like accidentally getting a really good fantasy team.
Very few things, really. You've set yourself up to feel disappointed.
Yes.
To feel like, all right, this is a season I have to write off at this point. And then to luck into like a really solid team. I mean, that's a major come up.
I agree, man. And I enjoy fantasy football, but I'm not like really invested in fantasy football. Like there's only so much waiver wire combing I'm willing to do and all of that stuff. And one thing I'm not doing, other people do this, but this is just, I don't understand how people do this, which is play in like 16 team leagues. You know what I'm talking about? Like people play in those big old giant leagues. And I'm sorry, there just aren't that many good players in the NFL. There aren't. Like I'm playing in a 12 team league right now that I feel like started as an 8-team league, which is what I prefer because everybody can feel good. Everybody put up numbers in an 8-team league. In a 12 team league, it gets a little trickier, but I guess it requires a little more skill. In a 16 team league, what the hell are we even doing here? We out here getting dudes you ain't never heard of before you've ever heard of them, just hoping, you know, like you're getting 5 points out of somebody. Oh man, I ain't playing that game. Like that's not what we want to do. So got there. Hope you guys got your Sunday ticket. If you're a Sunday ticket person, correct? Because we all do the same thing every year, which is Sunday morning. We were like, oh yeah, we got the Sunday ticket. And then we don't check it until like 12:30. And the next thing you know, your Sunday ticket is not working. And then you call and get on hold with DirecTV and you on hold all afternoon. I got lucky this year. My whole situation was working off the top. Normally doesn't happen that way. Didn't really have any of that change, but I tried to get on the tweets and let you guys know to get in on it early because Bo Jones care. If don't nobody else care, I'll be looking out for you. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what it is. But I know there's somebody that couldn't get on until halftime of the game that they wanted to see, and that had to be whack.
There's nothing more frustrating than having, like, paid for his particular service and not receiving said service.
Yes. I wonder if the people who work at DirecTV know, like, for example, I've been doing this job for a while. I have learned what days to take off of work because it just ain't going to be nothing to talk about, right? The day after the Major League Baseball All-Star game was typically one of those where it's just like, yo, we just ain't got like it's the only thing that's going on. What am I supposed to make out of it? And then the day after that, the only thing that used to be cracking was the ESPYs. That was the whole reason the ESPYs was there is because there was nothing else going on. I can't get out here talking about the ESPYs. You know, like that's just not, you know, that's not going to work for no 3 hours of radio or whatever it is. So, like, I would know to take that day off. I learned over time, President's Day, the day after the NBA All-Star game, take that off. You're not really going to be able to get anything going. Like, you just kind of learn when them days are. Them folks at DirecTV have to know, like, yo, I cannot work the morning of the first Sunday of the NFL season. They have to know, right? They have to be calling in and just being like, nah. I requested that day off months ago. There's a bunch of people in that call center who just started working there like 2 months ago and nobody put them up on game. Like, can you imagine like who the people are that are calling, whose anger and vitriol that you are dealing with in that moment? Can you imagine that?
They're doing the Lord's work.
Yeah. And I guarantee you, they get a lot of them calls from New York City, man. New York, and I guess L.A. will make you feel this way, perhaps, but really New York, and this is a big thing. New York has two home teams, and they both sorry. Like, the Sunday ticket becomes a different brand of necessity here. Like, oh, it's the game of the week. We'll get that. Maybe you will, maybe you won't. I don't know. You know what I mean? But it's you're going to get stuck watching these bums. This is my fifth football season in New York City. Now that I think about it, the fifth one. Surrounded by bums. For the last 8 years, I have lived in cities where the home team stunk. Or with the Dolphins, when I lived there, they didn't even stink. They were just there. Like, I don't know what purpose they served or anything else, but like, they were just there. They just be on TV, just there, interfering with your ability to actually like watch some decent football. It's not what you want. But I got it. And Gabe, I was able to watch the Steelers of Pittsburgh and the Bills of Buffalo. First of all, good job, Steelers, for winning that game. Because Ben Roethlisberger is cooked, man. Like, I can't believe that they keep telling themselves that they're going to keep this whole thing going. Like, this was weird to me about the Steelers with Ben Roethlisberger. Like, you see this thing with T.J. Watt just signed his contract. And one of the big deals of it was the Steelers have historically only guaranteed the first year of your contract when you sign with them. And they've done this around the board. And you can only really make this work if you really just enforce this on everybody. And they have. Everybody's contract only guaranteed after that 1 year, which one would assume is to give them a certain measure of flexibility to move on from this person, move on from that person, you know, whatever it happens to be. But I'm like, what's the point of having that flexibility if you don't actually put it on the road? And that's why I look at Ben Roethlisberger, like, why are we still here? Like, I felt like the Steelers were in a position in this last draft where they could find a way to go up and get one of these quarterbacks. Like, this was something that they could have done. They did not. They just keep bringing this old dude out here. And the thing is, he's good enough. Like, he's kind of like a lesser version of what Drew Brees was last year, where Drew Brees was cooked, but he could figure out how to work within his cookedness to still do some things, you know, like still make some short passes, still make it work. And that's what it seemed like Roethlisberger was out here doing. But he was cooked. Now, the thing was, on the other side, Josh Allen did not play well, but I wouldn't say he looked bad. Like, you kind of get the difference here that it was not, I mean, obviously, if you go look at the numbers and if you see the score and everything else, and I think he put the ball on the ground a couple of times because he's still loose with it in that way. He didn't have a good game, but he didn't look like the quarterback he was his first 2 years in the league, where at points he looked outright bad and you would see like flashes of potential, but he would be out there looking bad. He just did not play well. The thing is, how many games last year did he have where he did not play well? And there weren't many of them. Like, there were games that I could point to and I could be like, yeah, there you go, doing that Josh Allen stuff again, right? But I couldn't say that in sum total, he didn't play well. That team looked really good last year, and they feel and seem really talented at points. But if he don't play well, they can't win nothing. Like, they might be able to win a game here and there, but if he doesn't play well, they can't win. And it seems like what Buffalo has decided, or at least they decided for one game, and I don't have the greatest answer as to why. Maybe it's a situation that's kind of like that Tampa-Dallas game where Dallas immediately was like, we have no chance of running against them, so we're not even going to try. I don't think of the Steelers' defense as being that dominant in that regard. So why you got Josh Allen throwing the ball 50 times? Like, he's not Drew Brees. You know what I mean? Like, he's not that guy. They had him throw the ball 51 times. Or he had 51 attempts, because I'm not even throwing sacks in there. He had 51 attempts passing. He had 9 rushing attempts. All right, so we're talking about 60 plays of Josh Allen. I think they gave the running backs 15 carries combined. What? Like, come on, man. Don't drink that Kool-Aid so much that you get yourself to the point where you feel like the only thing your team can do is jump on Josh Allen's back. That ain't going to work. Like, I feel very confident saying that's not going to work. Because if you keep putting the ball in his hands like that, he's going to put it on the ground. Like, the only guy that's really out here that I feel more like, oh, he's about to put it on the ground. What's your man's name, Gabe? Danny Dimes? He stays putting the ball on the ground. Aren't you glad you're not a Giants fan?
Every time we have Shannon on, I just feel bad for my man.
The thing that makes it so bad with Shannon is, and I guess I hadn't thought about this, when I met Shannon, the Giants won a Super Bowl. Like, our first year doing radio, the Giants won a Super Bowl. And then the Giants, 4 years later, won another Super Bowl. And I don't think he has gotten a whiff of happiness since. Like, damn. By the way, while I'm here just talking randomly about the NFL, shout out to the homie Tyrod Taylor, or Tyrod Taylor is how you pronounce it. And I say that because I don't think we talk enough about just kind of the bad, like, streak of luck the dudes had. He just became like the bridge quarterback. You know, it was like, oh, hey, we drafted Baker Mayfield, but we could get Tyrod Taylor for like a third round pick and he'll hold it down. And then I think he got hurt or concussed or something. Baker Mayfield comes in, doesn't play for Cleveland again. Then the next year he goes, He backs up Phillip Rivers because Anthony Lynn was the coach there. Anthony Lynn had been in Buffalo with Tyrod. Okay. Phillip Rivers moves on. Tyrod Taylor's a starter. They accidentally poke a hole in his lung. The Justin Herbert era then begins. And so Taylor winds up in this, what I think is just kind of a weird situation in Houston, where they brought him on and gave him, you know, upper tier backup money. Because, hey, who knows if Deshaun Watson is going to play? And Deshaun Watson still plays for them. He's not charged. He's not on the commissioner's list. He's just not going to play. And I don't know exactly why he's not playing. Not to say that there aren't reasons for him to not be playing, but I don't know what exactly the reason is that he is not playing. But he is not playing. And then he went up there. And then, look, I know the Jaguars are sorry, but he lit them up, man. Like, Tyrod looked good. And see, this is where I think, for the Texans, like if you are a fan of the Texans, my guess is you're going to end the year loving Taylor, regardless of how well he plays. Because what they got, I think, is really rare is that that team is chaos. Like in just about every single way that you could point to, that team is chaos. They are poorly talented. They don't have the guys. They got an owner that nobody trusts. They got a first-year head coach that I don't know what you expect from him, just honestly looking at what everything is. And you've got whatever's going on with the Deshaun Watson situation. But what they do have is a starting quarterback. Now, I'm not saying that Taylor, like he made the Pro Bowl once, but that ain't never going to happen again. Like, I'm not saying that he's that kind of guy when I say a starting quarterback, but he's the dude that's going to show up at that press conference. He's going to say all the right stuff. Like, he is going to look, if nothing else, like a professional. And there is a chance that there will be nothing else professional about that team other than him. Meanwhile, they played against a team with a college coach. And I just don't know if this game is long for Urban Meyer, Gabe. I don't know if you saw this, but somebody put out a report the morning of the game that apparently Urban's temper has been flashing on him. And they said that losing all those preseason games was weighing on him too tough. And I'm like, dog, you might as well quit right now. If you couldn't handle losing games, then it don't matter if you lose them. Oh, no, this is going to be a problem. And this is going to be a process with Trevor Lawrence, it looks like. Like, we have seen guys who are able to walk in and boom, get this thing going right away. Justin Herbert would be an example of that, right? I don't think that's what's going to happen here. I think it's in part because the team that he plays for is bad, but I also think it's going to take him a while to learn what you could get away with at Clemson is not what you can get away with in the NFL and figure out what those margins are. Like, he threw an interception yesterday where the defense was in a cover two. Like, I think they talked about it on the Sunday Night Football broadcast. The defense was in a cover two and the corner went back into this and Trevor Lawrence tried to make a throw and it looked like the corner was just basically right there. And my only guess as to why he did that is in college, he could get that past the corner, even if the corner was where he's supposed to be. And you ain't really doing that in the NFL. That's just not what this is going to be. So you go have a quarterback that's never been on a bad team before, anything close to it, trying to figure that out. Like, he went from being on one of the five most talented teams in America to maybe the least talented team in the NFL. A coach who coached a bad team one time and quit immediately after and wore it on his face the whole time. And now he out here flashing on the coaches, flashing on every. Like, I was fairly optimistic about how this would go because I figured he'd understand. It's the NFL, right? You lose a case. Nah. Some dudes just simply aren't built to ever lose, ever. Your boy Jameis lit it up. Did you realize this, by the way, quietly? I mean, I imagine you didn't because I don't blame you for not thinking about these things, but I saw it on the tweets. The undefeated has sent something out about it. This weekend is going to end with 10 black quarterbacks as starters. And that's not even like talking about Justin Fields, Trey Lance, who I think will be starters by the end of the year. You know, Lamar will be the 10th. I think there were 9 that started yesterday, and Lamar would be the 10th, which is interesting because there's ebbs and flows in this, like the ups and downs. Like, this is probably as many, if not more, than there's ever been. And it's interesting that it's something that we didn't notice in large part because it's all guys that we're somewhat familiar with and dudes that we've heard of over time. Like, there's still a long way to go with regards to that, but it is something to be said. You had 9 black starting quarterbacks out there. Nobody really picked up on it. And by the way, all of them played reasonably well. Jameis had 5 touchdown passes. Teddy Bridgewater had a little something for him. Tyrod Taylor had, like, we ain't even talk about the ones that's got to carry the water for everybody. I'm talking about the level of black quarterbacks that normally don't get to stick around for long. The dudes, just guys playing well. See what happens when you play Lift Every Voice and Sing Before the Game? All right, so Adam Schefter put out something that said that the reason that Lamar Jackson has not signed a long-term deal yet with Baltimore is because he's negotiating it himself, and he's just a little bit too busy, you know, being the quarterback of an NFL team, and so he'll get to negotiating the contract after that. My brother, please, just go get an agent. I'm asking you kindly, like, please just go get an agent. And so I said this on the tweets this morning that we were recording this. And of course, I had people push back at me. And it was an interesting range of responses. And this is like a difficult topic for me to talk about often with people without sounding like an asshole. And the reason is y'all ain't got agents. And that's not a judgment of anybody. Like, there aren't very many people who work jobs and live lives where you kind of need somebody to do these things for you, or you go get somebody to do this. But y'all ain't got agents. Like, this is just a part of life that I feel like you might want to defer to some other folks when it comes down to talking about it. And so I just wanted to talk about this because, honestly, I don't blame you for not knowing anything about not having an agent again, because why would you in your life? But just something for you to think about that actually might make your life a lot easier in the rest of your time and everything else. All right. So the reason I think Lamar Jackson needs to go ahead and get an agent, especially now that we're not talking about a rookie contract, which is in effect slotted. Like, I think there's a fair argument to be made about simply hiring an attorney to negotiate that first contract, and then you get off easy on the rate, right? Because it's just not going to cost as much money. Because I think that people think that when you get an agent, the agent negotiates your contract, your agent takes a fee, and then that fee is compensation for negotiating the contract. And that is not how I view the agent game at all. I view it like this. You negotiate this contract, you get the commission or whatever that comes out of that contract, but you earn your money the meantime, in between time. You earn that money by having every conversation that I don't feel like having. You represent me, and I can't be everywhere at one time. I'm not Bugs Bunny. I can't throw the pitch and catch the pitch and catch the fly ball and throw it back in and be the person that catches it and make the tag. Sorry, I'm not a Looney Tune. I don't have it in me like that. I need you to go be me in some places. And by the way, I need you to go be me in some conversations where some people are going to tell me some things that are going to be patently insulting. And it is best that I am unaware that those things have happened or those things have taken place, right? My agent don't bring me what their first offer was because he know we saying no. No need for him to come in and tell me something that's just part of the game when it's going to have me ready to burn this down. You don't do that. You don't need that. Like, those are the things that your agent winds up providing you, right? Like, that's what the name of the game is. It's not just, I can keep that money to myself. Well, chances are the agent can make the pie a little bit bigger. And by the time the agent take that percent out the pie, you're still coming out on top. That's a big part of it. But this is the thing. I'll never forget this. And it applies to being the agent stuff and everything else. I was reading a story once about taxi drivers and Uber many, many years ago. And really not that long ago. But I thought it was very interesting. This one guy who was a taxi driver had a son who was an Uber driver. And what he told his son was, every day you do this, you are putting a professional out of work. And his argument was basically, and he's correct, that these Uber drivers are amateurs. They're just people with cars who drive you somewhere. But the taxi driver is a professional. And I think that we forget sometimes, like, that person has dedicated a large part of his life to driving people around the city, knowing the city, knowing how to do this, knowing how to do that, knowing these little tricks or whatever it is. And we all drive and stuff like that. But if we drove for a living, we would approach this differently and we would know some things that are different. Yeah, you got GPS now. We can do this for you. Sure. But there's still things that taxi driver can do for you. Like, if you're running late to catch a flight, get a taxi. That guy knows what's up. That guy is going to get it done. That's the way you do it. But there's a real value in a professional. Right. Just so hold that as an overarching theme and thought. I used to do my own taxes. And then I stopped doing my own taxes because part of why I did my own taxes was I can do that. I have degrees, right? I can do that. You know how often I do my taxes when I do my taxes? Once a year. Once a year. I'm not getting any better at doing my taxes. I only do it once a year. I'm not getting any practice at this, right? My tax man, how many times they do taxes? All the time. They know all the tricks. They know all the wrinkles. They know where all the money is. And I come out on top in the end by doing that. Because, yeah, I can do my taxes, but what I know about doing taxes, right? That's the thing about Lamar Jackson in this. He's probably, I'm sure this is happening, right? Like, they're working with an attorney of some sort or whatever, you know, to make sure that everything winds up okay on the back end and everything else. But I know this. I know how much money I make, and it ain't as much money as Lamar Jackson. And I know that my time is too valuable to be out here doing my own taxes and to be out here negotiating my own contract. Like, the value of my time, if I took what my rate is, what you got to pay me for my time, and took that as that value, hey, man, when you do the math on that, all that time spent doing that other stuff and getting your feelings hurt. I talked to Fonte Coleman about this in 2004, right? Fonte knows one of my partners, and we were at his crib. And he said something about having a manager. They had this dude, I don't even know if he still worked with Big Doe, but he had this cat named Big Doe. You ain't really want no problems with Big Doe. He's a very nice man, but you ain't really want no problems with Big Doe. But what he explained about the big purpose about Big Doe was, he's like, hey, sometimes you need to call somebody a and you can't be the person to do it. But Big Doe can. You know what I mean? He could be the one that can do that. You can't be the one to do that. And they're going to say something to you that makes you want to say that. And you need to say that at some point. But you, Lamar Jackson, cannot be the person to do this. Like, I assure you, if he goes through this negotiation with them and it never gets to a point where he feels like he needs to say that, then he left money on the table. Somebody else needs to come in here and to handle this. So this is not about any kind of like player empowerment or anything like that. Like, this isn't about, one cat hit me and was like, well, didn't you say we wanted players to be more contractually literate? Yes, so that when the agent gets done negotiating the contract, you can look at it and know what it says. But you don't have to go in here and actually do it. These cats got personal chefs, but you think they should be negotiating their own contracts? Like, I'm sure they can cook. Maybe not great. But the gap in functionality between the meal he could prepare himself and the contract he can negotiate himself. You know what I mean? You feel me? You see where I'm coming from? Dog, go get you an agent. Save that time. I'm not trying to like keep that industry afloat or anything like that. I'm just telling you, I would not want that over my head. Gate, he's had COVID twice and be running all the time. He need to be trying to sign that contract 15 minutes ago. Like, there's a lot in the air. And you know, they stay looking for reasons not to pay him, but act like, you know, the league is going to figure him out and everything else. They looking for every reason not to pay you. Hurry up. Get somebody else on it. Sign that deal. If I'm him, I would not have walked into the season without a contract. It just feels like it would be far too risky. You can't trust that they're going to honor you. Like, if you go out here and tear your ACL, are they going to honor what you've done for them before or anything like that? Probably not. It's a lot to ask for. Go find somebody. Somebody. I know his mom had been working with him before, and I don't know anything about her, so I don't want to make any assumptions about what she's capable of. Like, that's a big thing. For example, remember I used to say that all the time, Gabe, about Kawhi Leonard and Uncle Dennis, where I was like, be very careful because I don't know his uncle, and it turns out he works for like Merrill Lynch or something like that. He's just his uncle. Right. Like, we just assume that, you know, Uncle Roscoe was coming in here, you know, and don't really know what he's doing. I don't know. I don't know what his mom does. I don't know what she did. I don't know what she can or cannot do. So I don't want to judge her on this. I just don't generally think it's a good idea to have your mama handle your business, no matter who you are, your mom, your dad, whatever it is. Nah. I just don't think that that's the way that you should wind up playing this game. But yeah, all these cats, like, somebody brought up Ricky Williams in the discussion I had, and people don't get this. They're like, yeah, this is why you shouldn't have Master P negotiate your contract. For one, Master P didn't negotiate his contract. Master P owned the agency. A gentleman named Leland Hardy negotiated his contract. And I realized the last president has not done good things for this particular brand, but the dude, Leland Hardy, did go to Wharton. You know, like, he was an actual professional, but Ricky wanted that stupid contract. You know, now what normally happens under those circumstances is an agency will say, we're not taking the commission because we can't put our name on this so that you don't have it 25 years later and people think that you were the one that negotiated the dumb deal. But Ricky Williams wanted that dumb deal. you know? You can do this a bit unconventionally and still make it happen and still get it done. But sometimes there's a reason why the status quo is the status quo. Every now and then that happens. Let somebody else do this for you. Like, I bet you Lamar Jackson don't clean his own house. Now, what do you think he's more capable of doing? Cleaning his own house or negotiating his own contract? What do you think take more time? If you haven't heard, it's part of ESPN Nation, brought to you by Dr. Pepper. College football is back, and so are the fans. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from business.
Hey, Bomani, it's Abha Vatrai of the Washington Post. Business is booming at dollar stores around the country as more people rely on them for food and other essentials. Prices are rising, which you've probably noticed at the supermarket, and a number of people I've talked to say they just can't afford to shop at the local grocery store anymore. Instead, they're cobbling together meals based on what they can find at the dollar store, which speaks to the growing inequality we're seeing across the economy. The sheer number of dollar stores in the United States is staggering on its own. There are currently 34,000 dollar stores, which is more than every single Walmart, Starbucks, and McDonald's combined. Now, critics say dollar stores create food deserts by putting local grocers out of business. We're starting to see a number of cities setting limits, saying a new dollar store can't open within a mile or two of an existing one, for example, or requiring that new dollar stores have pharmacies or sell fresh groceries. But in the meantime, we're destined to get even more dollar stores in this country. Nearly 1,700 new ones are set to open this year, making up half of all new retail.
Here's the thing. Let's say the dollar store has fresh produce. Guess what? It ain't the dollar store no more. And tell me if I'm tripping. But the dollar store might have produce, and their produce might be fresh. That don't mean it's going to be good. You know what I mean? Like, it's produce. In theory, it checks the box of produce. Very ketchup is a vegetable sort of situation, I feel like, when you say you are going to do this. But, I mean, this is one of the things about people living in rural areas, is that it's so much easier to get to a dollar store than it is to get to a grocery store. Like, that is not something that is easy. Or even, like, living in New York. Like, where I live in New York, I can get to a grocery store by foot. And the ability to get to a grocery store by foot in New York is especially important. Unless you want to be carrying groceries on the subway, which is probably going to involve you taking groceries up and down steps. And not a short flight of steps, mind you. Right? But you kind of need a grocery store in walking distance of where you live. But walking distance does not mean within a 10-minute walk. Like, you know what I mean? Like you need a grocery store to be kind of close. Where I live right now, I don't think there is such a grocery store. Like, there's a grocery store I could walk probably about a half mile to or something like that. But, like, just, I mean, do you want to walk a half mile, even if you pull in a cart or whatever? Like, do you want to walk a half mile to go get groceries? Like, that's wildly inconvenient. And the grocery store might not be that cracking. So what do you then do? Well, you wind up going to these dollar stores that ain't got good stuff. And the irony of this is, as the dollar store goes in higher demand, the laws of economics tell you it won't really feel like a dollar store for much longer because they're going to start charging you more. Like, it's all broken when so much demand is going to the dollar store. And it's the clearest sign to me of the divide in income and wealth that we have in this country. Is this is something that rich people do not ever have to think about. And not just poor people, just like not rich people are buying things at dollar stores you're not supposed to buy, man. And look, I don't want you to think I'm a cat that's out here thinking I'm above the dollar store. Hell no, man. I'm always trying to get something cheap. Man, I got some water from the dollar store one time and it tastes funny. Ain't nobody supposed to live like that.
This next story comes from entertainment.
Hi, I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the host of NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour. I wrote about Mike Richards a couple of times in terms of his originally being announced as the next host of Jeopardy and then being announced as not the next host of Jeopardy and then eventually losing his position as the executive producer as well. What I thought about it most was that it was similar to watching a ball bounce down a flight of stairs in the sense that there were a lot of twists and turns. Different things were uncovered. You know, he had a podcast on which he said a lot lot of very foolish and offensive things. You know, his reputation at a prior workplace was kind of clearly pretty mixed. There was dogged reporting out of the Ringer on his activities and his career. And it was clear from kind of pretty early on that he was not going to keep that job. And they just hung on and hung on and hung on. And as a result, it was much, much worse. It was never a good idea to announce the EP as the next host. And people sort of thought, well, so he just hired himself? Nobody was enthusiastic about that, especially after they had tried out all these people, you know, a lot of whom were pretty popular. There's obviously a big popular push for LeVar Burton. There are other people who are well-liked. And then they hired the EP. It just felt kind of ridiculous. And I think, you know, the point was they should have just bailed out a lot sooner, and they didn't. And as a result, they paid the price. So that was sort of the take on Mike Richards and his short career as the putative host of Jeopardy.
So I have to be honest. I watched everybody's reactions in so many ways to all things about the Jeopardy search. And I thought everybody sounded like some form of idiot in the course of it. I mean, idiot may be going too far, but no one coated themselves in glory as this whole Jeopardy thing went on. Here's the thing. Number one, no matter who they made the new host of Jeopardy, quote unquote, people weren't going to like it. Like, there were going to be some people who liked whoever it was, but whoever was going to win that was going to win that with the plurality of public support. So if 25% of the people, assuming that the people had the vote, right? If 25% of the people wanted one particular candidate out of all the candidates they had, that 25% would have been enough to win. At which point, 75% of the people are upset. Like, that was the point that David Stern tried to make to LeBron about the decision, which is there are five teams in the running. Only one of them is going to win, which means everybody but that one team is going to hate you. And so that was always going to be the case. And so you had all these people on the internet with the LeVar Burton push. And I guess it would have been cool if LeVar Burton would have been the host of Jeopardy, but I watched a couple of his fill-in points. Like, he wasn't bad, but it wasn't like he had some towering performance that nobody else could top. I saw the ratings and they weren't particularly high when LeVar Burton was on there, but people were just really upset about the idea that LeVar Burton didn't become the host of Jeopardy. When was the last time you thought about no LeVar Burton before this whole thing came up? Like, you act like LeVar Burton had been hosting AAA Jeopardy and was leading the league with 35 homers. And it just only stood to reason that he would be the person to get the call up to big league Jeopardy. And he would be the person to have the job. No, you ain't thought about it. Like, you really like reading Rainbow that much? You was watching Star Trek The Next Generation like every week to go see LeVar Burton? You didn't care about LeVar Burton. That was just the thing you wanted to be mad about on the internet that day. But what Jeopardy did was they pretended like this thing was going to be a real search, and it wasn't. The boss had decided that he was going to hire himself, which I don't think would have been a problem if they hadn't pretended like they were having tryouts. The boss hiring himself doesn't offend me. It doesn't bother me. I don't look at this as a white man doing something, and not, you know, the reason I don't look at it that way, I think I made this, I don't know if I made the example here, but I've made it other places. My man Ebro at Hot 97. Ebro was the program director at Hot 97. And as I recall, Ebro made himself the host of the morning show and then quit as the programming director. He said content was where the game was. And so he wanted to be the host of the morning show. And that was the direction that he wanted to go in. Okay. Ebro ain't white, right? But that's how that goes sometimes, right? People put themselves into those positions. Greg Popovich with the Spurs hired himself to be the head coach. That worked out fairly well. Like, that happens in the game, I think, more than people recognize or realize. So I didn't have a problem with any of that. What really got me about it with Mike Richards is that once all this other stuff came out and he had ultimately been exposed, and they decided, okay, this guy can't be the host of Jeopardy, which he couldn't be because that's all anybody would ever think about was that. What got me was how long it took before they said, and he can't be the executive producer either. Like, given what the things were they were talking about from the podcast and given what the allegations were about the way that he had treated women, how did he get to keep the job with the power? People were okay with that. Like, once they said he wasn't going to be Jeopardy host, I saw people celebrate that. I could be wrong, but I didn't see a lot of those same people saying, okay, well, now this guy shouldn't have this job either. Like, he couldn't have the job hosting Jeopardy at that point, because whatever people saw him, that would be the stuff that they would think about. And that interferes with your ability to actually host the show, right? But I could make an argument that he was actually capable of hosting Jeopardy. You know, that he could be the person to read the questions, to talk to the people, all of those things, right? He was not unqualified to do the job as much as it had now grown impossible for him to do the job. And I don't know if he was capable of it to begin with, but you get my point, right? But he had to absolutely be disqualified from being the executive producer. Like, you are not capable if you are doing these things and saying these things to women at work. You cannot do that. Like, the way you're talking about the models and all that stuff, then you are not qualified to do this job. And people just hung around for a while. We're like, yeah, well, I wonder about that part. No, that was the one that he had to get out of. And if you don't like the idea that the boss made himself the host, then you need him to stop being the boss. Like, that would be where you would think. But this stuff isn't about thinking. The way that we respond to these things is not about any sort of logic or system, as I've talked about before. It is about how we create this outrage machine, and then we build it up and get everybody behind it. And if something happens where you feel like somebody's been canceled, and you're like, yeah, we did something, right? And then they may blossom the, like, Tournament of Champions host, and then they got to doing some Googling on her, and we're like, oh, I don't know how we feel about all of these things. But I don't think people had really no outrage left at that point. And so that one just kind of go ride through. That's what it is, you know, and they'll go about it. But I just couldn't believe how passionate people were about who the new Jeopardy host was. And all the people with all that passion, may I ask you a simple question? Since that happened, when's the last time you watched Jeopardy? It's entirely possible none of you cared that much in the first place.
All right. So this last story, the reporter wasn't able to join us for it, but I thought it was an interesting one. It comes from tech. So Tesla filed a patent 2 years ago, and it was just approved for laser windshield wipers. Basically, the windshield wipers are able to detect debris on the windshield. When it detects debris, it kind of emits a pulse, like a laser pulse, to blow off said debris. Interested in your thoughts, Bo.
It's just the beginning. All I'm saying is this, man. I don't really know nothing about lasers. I ain't never really like looked into lasers or whatever it was. But I'm here to tell you that when somebody finds out that their car windshield got lasers on it, they gonna tweak that thing. And life is going to be like a video game. It's going to be like, what was that game called? Spy Hunter? You remember Spy Hunter, Gabe? Spy Hunter might be a little out of your generation, but for the other people, it's about to be Spy Hunter. That's what this is about to be. Like, this is a half step away from people thinking they could turn their own car into kit. And I'm just here to tell you, you can't. But that ain't going to stop people from trying. And then when Elon Musk finds this out and there's some money in it, he's going to be like them people that make them guns and be like, yo, I hear that people are altering our guns and turning them into automatic weapons. Well, what we need to do is send them instructions. Just you watch. Just you watch. I mean, it'll save off some carjackings. You think you're about to run up there and get that Tesla. The next thing you know, you catching a hot one. And I don't mean an old school hot one. I mean a hot beam. I'm going to get Moonraker through your chest. Our greatest voicemails are fueled by Gatorade. Whatever path you take to greatness, Gatorade is there to fuel it. Greatness starts with G.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bo. So this milk crate challenge thing happened a couple weeks ago. It was discouraged to prevent people from hurting themselves. But I thought it was a good time to ask, what was the dumbest thing that you have done or you've seen someone do to get attention? Because that happens quite often.
And that was exactly what it was. Although I will say, walk around New York City since the milk crate challenge, I got to say, people got a lot more milk crates laying around than one would think. They tend to really pop up when people do like street memorials and they light a bunch of candles and stuff. I don't know where they get them at. Also, for what it's worth, the memorials tend to be right next to the bodega. So, you know, like they probably just go, let me hold them for a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I couldn't find any milk crates around where I was living. I was looking to, you know, strap one off to the back of my bike. What's very interesting about this is nobody left their name or their location. So they obviously didn't want to get embarrassed.
That's the best kind.
Our first one, it sounds like the guy's from Florida. Here it is.
Pete Disbo. Was at Florida State in the 90s. Freshman year in 96. Beat Florida. I don't know what was going on with the fans, but they decided to rush the field. Probably one of the most embarrassing moments in Florida State history, last 5 years, not included. So with that being the case, in 98, when Florida came back, school's not having it. So if they did their thing, Peter Warwick, he had the little highlight they always show when they show Peter Warwick against the Gators, and game was in hand in the fourth quarter. Well, I was sitting in the student section in the end zone where the team comes out, and everyone knew it was already announced, if you rush the field, you will get dealt with. Well, you know, liquid courage being what it is, frat boy culture being what it is, I had a prime seat. A guy, his friends were egging him on. He said, hey, if I do it, this will start the wave. I'll take one for the team. So he decided to jump over the railing and run onto the field. There were state troopers lining the field. There was one big red dog looking state trooper who saw him, and you could see him licking his chops like the bulldog in Tom and Jerry. He grabbed dude with one hand, folded him like a pretzel, stood on his shirt like a receipt flying through a parking lot, and then looked at the rest of the student section, pointed at them in a way that said, come on, just like I got your boy, I'll get you. So at that moment, my boy looked at the crowd and repeated that line from Lean On Me, from Morgan Freeman. He said, next time, it could be you. Next time, it will be you. And not another person from that section rushed the field. Did it off last, got folded up like a pretzel. Treated like a receipt.
No, he said, like a receipt flying through the parking lot. Sir, I hope you are a writer, because that kind of that kind of simile will make you rich.
Wow. Yeah, I thought that guy was quite artful.
Yes, yes. Very well played.
The red dog of a security guy.
Yeah, oh yeah, you know what, the red dogs, boy. You don't want no problem with that.
All right, this next guy, again, no name, but a little bit of hi-ya in this voicemail.
What's going on, Bo? So back in about 2008, I was playing high school football, and one of the kids on the team whose dad was a coach was running his mouth to another kid on the team who knew that hi-ya. So rather than the dude who knew hi-ya just beat him up on the spot, he said, you know what, after practice, we'll gather everybody around, I'll give you 3 punches to the body, and then in return, I'll hit you with 1. And so the dude on the team agreed to it. And after practice, we all gathered around, and the one running his mouth was about 110 pounds soaking wet, gave him 3 hardest body shots he could give him. And the dude who knew that hi-yah didn't even flinch. Next thing you know, this man turned around and just floored this dude, hit him right in the stomach. You just heard the air just go right out of his stomach. And that was the dumbest thing I've ever seen somebody do to try to look cool. Thanks, Bo.
Yo, when the guy proposed the deal, how could he not see the setup immediately? Like, Gabe, you saw the okie doke, right?
Anyone who proposes the terms first, you know it's suspect.
Right. You get to hit me as hard as you want. Don't worry, I'll be cool. No. Man, I ain't even gonna mess with you like that. Like, that's the place that I'm going to at that point. It's like, how about you do that? Come on, man, that's stupid. We ain't even gonna do that. No.
This is a negotiation tactic. You start high.
The pride, I think the pride came up because he basically said to this man, you are too weak to phase me. Nothing you can do. I bet I can hurt you. After you throw that last punch, man, you gotta run. You know what I'm saying? Like there's no need for you to hold up your end of the bargain. Like, I tell you this, there's many kinds of suckers that you could think I am. I'd rather you think I was the sucker that welched on that deal than the sucker that was coughing up blood.
This last one might be the dumbest out of 3. Here it is.
Hey, Bo. Back in the day, you know, you go play ball afterwards. Cats just kind of be sitting there chilling, just shooting the breeze. These dudes got to arguing about how somebody could jump out of a moving car and how fast the car could be going for a dude to dive out the back. Saw a dude straight dive out the back of a moving car going about 50 miles an hour in a parking lot for $45. Dude said he had a whole way to jump out and kind of Bruce Lee style duck and roll. This dude jumped out and it was about as ugly as you would imagine it would be. That's the last time I saw something as silly as this milk crate challenge.
All right, so I got to say something. and I could be wrong about this last gentleman's voice, but I would like to say that generally, I don't have the stats, but speaking anecdotally, Gabe, I feel as though our voicemail callers tend to be, I would argue, disproportionately African-American, right? Maybe it has to do with the topicality, I don't know, but they tend to be disproportionately African-American. I noticed that when we bring up people doing dumb things in public for attention, the Caucasian audience jumped up a little higher than they ordinarily do. Now, they did not leave their names necessarily in this, but like that last story, like, oh yeah, that's white boys right there. Like, that's CWB. I know CWB when I hear it. That is CWB. Jump out of car.
And Bruce Lee.
Dog, I gotta say, CWB will get you into places. My old radio producer once talked about how him and his homies had a taser in the room and they were passing it around, tasing each other just so they could see how it would feel. CWB. Like, I just can't. Are your lives just not that, just not thrilling? I just don't. Like, I don't feel like my life is that thrilling, but I also don't feel like I need to go manufacture thrills. I don't know what it is. I don't know how we get here, but that one right there. I'm trying to think how dire the situation in a car would have to be like, I'm just going to dive out this car. You know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to think of the gun. Like, is there a gun to my head? Like, you know, all these things. What's it going to take for me to tuck my chin and roll out of this car? How fast or not fast would the car have to be for me to be willing, for me to actually do this? CWB ain't even doing all that math. They're like, oh, that sounds like fun. Like, is your insurance even cover that? Like, I think about all the things that, like, I feel like health insurance is really like a warranty. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think about all the things that a warranty won't cover. I do kind of feel like your health insurance should be able to be like, you did what? You can take this up at arbitration.
It's like the motorcycle clause in the NBA contracts.
Yes, yes. Like, come on, man. You do better than that. Like, think about this. The motorcycle is one thing, but at least those people think they're going to be okay. This dude jumped out a moving car.
Well, he thought he was going to be okay.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but the plan was to do the thing that would get you hurt. The motorcycle rider just thinks the thing that will get him hurt will not happen. This person opted into the potential injury in a much more emphatic way. But ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing three times a week. Gabe Bassain handling everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Abba Batarai of The Washington Post. Check out her story on Americans relying on groceries from the dollar store. Thanks to Linda Holmes of NPR. Check out her coverage of Mike Richards and the whole Jeopardy fiasco at npr.org. All right, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.